Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is August 25th, 2018, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is The Top 10 Changes to ATLS's 10th Edition. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Neil Perry. Neil is an associate professor of surgery and critical care at Western University. You know, it used to be called UWO when I went here, but now we call it Western. All right. He is a medical director of the trauma program for the London Health Science Center and the site chief of surgery at Victoria Hospital. Dr. Perry is also a national member of the Committee on Trauma for the American College of Surgeons, where he serves as a member of the ATLS committee and as the chair of the Surgical Skills Committee. Welcome to the SGEM, Neil.
Well, thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm really looking forward to this.
Well, this is the SGEM Extra episode, and it's going to be the last show before we start season number 7, which will start on September 1st.
Incredible. You've been doing this for 6 years.
6 years. Yeah, and what a ride it's been. We have almost 37,000 subscribers now to the SGEM, but our goal continues to be to cut that knowledge translation window, that KT window, down from over 10 years to less than 1 year using the power of social media. Ultimately, though, we want patients to get the best care based on the best evidence. We also want to teach some critical thinking skills and encourage skepticism.
Well, it's an honor to be part of the last episode of season 6. It's a pretty amazing, ambitious plan you've proven, but you've proven that you kind of have done this.
Well, you know, you've got to have a bit of a personality disorder, I think. Neil, we've known each other for a few years. And
hence the personality disorder.
Yeah, personality disorder. Yeah, teaching an ATLS course, right, together. And just let me say, as somebody who comes in and teaches, and you're the course director, you're a phenomenal educator.
Well, that's very kind of you to say, and thanks, but I would echo the same back to you. And you also go that extra mile usually and bring in the candy.
I'm a bit of a candy man, but not when it comes to the opioids. It's the candy man from Smarties and Nerds.
I think you're going to have to be careful as you launch them out in the audience as you had done in the past.
Yes, though. I have. I've been worried I was going to take out somebody's eye. Remember that? What's that Christmas movie? You're going to take out your eye. A Christmas Story, right? Where he wants rifle. Yeah. Little Ralphie wants the rifle.
We have known each other for a long time. In fact, I remember
when
you were an orthopedic surgery resident.
Oh, you're going to bring that up? Okay, so I also, besides respecting you as an educator, I really like your choice in cars. You drove up tonight to the Batcave, yes, here in a Tesla, and allowed me to take it for a little spin. I had the blood pushed back to my occiput area. Oh, wow. Now, are you driving this because of the technology, the safety, the environment, some combination?
Yeah, more of the combination. I mean, I always liked the look of the car, and I liked how fast it went. I needed something where I could put my three kids in the back seat. And so it seemed logical that's what I went with. The electrical aspect was really more secondary, but I've drunk the Kool-Aid now, and I don't think I'm going back to petrol car.
Well, after hammering the gas pedal, and it's not a gas pedal.
No, it's not, man.
After hammering the accelerator, I now know how you got the three kids in the back seat. They were in the front seat. Holy smokes. That has got a lot of torque.
Yeah, it's the first few hundred meters are crazy. But I miss the sound of a good sports car, though. I still miss that.
We got to get to the formal part of the SGEM Extra. And today we're going to be talking about ATLS. Can you give us the backstory about how ATLS got started in the first place?
Yeah, sure. So the course really evolved from a tragic plane crash in 1976. There was an orthopedic surgeon named James Steiner who was piloting his plane, which crashed in rural Nebraska. His wife was killed on impact, and he and three of his four children sustained severe injuries, and one amazingly only had minor injuries. The care he received at the local rural hospital was really not ideal at the time, or certainly not currently, which really led to his famous quote that he said, "When I can provide better care in the field with limited resources than what my children and I received at the primary care facility, there's something wrong with the system, and the system has to be changed." So with that impetus from that experience, a group of surgeons and doctors in Nebraska, led by Dr. Steiner, got together and developed what turned out to be the first ATLS course. This was quickly adopted by the Committee on Trauma at the American College of Surgeons, and the first official course was given in 1978. So, ATLS is 40 years old. And I was at a committee meeting this past spring that was celebrating the 40th anniversary, and one of Dr. Steiner's sons actually spoke. So we heard firsthand exactly how this incredible story impacted him and the rest of his life along the way.
Well, since its inception, it really has grown. Do you have any fun facts that you carry around about the current state of ATLS?
Yeah, I mean, I think now ATLS is probably known worldwide as the premier trauma education course. And to date, really over 1.5 million students have taken the course in over 75,000 courses across the world. An average of about 50 students are trained in 3,000 courses each year. And the course for the last probably 4 or 5 years is now being taught more outside of North America than within North America. So it really has a huge worldwide hub, and it's still promulgating to various countries across the world.
Well, Neil, I realize this is your first appearance on the SGEM, and notice how I said first,
okay,
which means I want more.
Roger
I
that.
I want more, and it's always great to collaborate with other specialties, and having you on as a surgeon is fantastic. But if you're going to say million, I have to teach you how to say it like Dr. Evil. 1.5 million. I mean, I didn't go to Evil Medical School for 6 years to be called Mr. Thank you very much. Okay, well, ATLS just came out with their 10th edition. And of course, this made me think of David Letterman's top 10 list, because I used to go home around 11:30 after leaving the library when it would close at 11. I'd get home around 11, 11:30, midnight, and I'd watch David Letterman when I was in university.
Yeah, so did I. And I imagine you probably wasn't always when you're coming back from the library.
Oh, I was always coming back from the library.
And it does date us a little bit. And just for those youngsters out there, Stephen Colbert took over the Letterman show, I don't know how many years ago, but in fact, I saw Letterman live once when I was in New York, and it was just incredible.
Now I'm just jealous.
It was really
jealous
cool.
About your car. I'm jealous about you seeing Letterman. Oh, well, we're going to do our own top 10 list. The top 10 changes to ATLS 10th edition.
And of course, these are my personal choices and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the ATLS committee, for the Committee on Trauma at the American College of Surgeons or Western University or anybody else.
So what you're saying is it's just all you, Neil.
It's all on my shoulders.
All right. So I think that sounded like a bit of a disclaimer. Okay. I recently taught the 10th edition with you, and I have to say it is much different than the previous versions.
Yeah, I think that certainly since I've been involved in ATLS, but even when I talk to people who've been involved from close to the beginning, that this is almost the biggest change in the course since its inception, in the delivery of the course and in how it's taught.
All right, so here we go. This is the top 10 changes to ATLS 10th edition, according to Dr. Neil Perry. Number one. No more lectures?
Yeah. So the lectures have been banned, and we're calling these case-based discussions. These are all interactive, so it's really important that the students come prepared. They need to read the manuals. They can't be cracking the cellophane the first time that they're there.
Cracking the cellophane, yeah. And, you know, it's a bit like flipping the classroom, right? So you give them the information in advance, and so then they can come better prepared, and you can have a higher level of discussion. But as an instructor coming to it, you know who else has to read the manual? Me, the instructor. Because in previous versions, I must admit, they were small changes, baby steps. You can't do this with the 10th. It is a leap. It is a big leap. And when I got the material, I really had to do some homework and digest it, because you could not just show up and say, well, I've taught this a few times before. I'll just refresh it the night before. Not in this case.
You know, we're really truly adult education. No longer are we spoon-feeding the answers, which some of the instructors that I've been involved with have said it's maybe a downside to this course, but I completely disagree. I think it's much better to make it a case-based, fully interactive, and we need to draw the discussion out of our students.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's better when you engage them like that and then draw out the answers rather than giving them the answers, sort of like anyone, Bueller. But let's go on to number two, and you have some new skill stations.
Yeah, so the skill stations are now all based on a case-based unfolding scenarios for A, B, C, D, and E's, rather than the anatomically based skill stations that we had before, where you do the chest x-ray, and some were shock, but chest x-ray and the C-spine and that type of thing.
Well, I'm, you know, familiar with my ABCs. I was pretty good with my ABCs, but once you get to D and E, you start losing me. So I'm wondering, could you just refresh us? What's the D and E stand for if you haven't recertified in the last 4 years?
So you remember the ABCs.
I remember the ABCs. Now, are you going to make me say them? Airway, breathing, circulation?
All right.
Okay, so
I
know
them. I'm going to pull these out of you then. Now, okay. You're gonna... So what's the D, do you think?
This is
that one?
this is very meta now. I think it's a disability.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And then the E is about exposure, and you're exposing the patient.
That is correct. See, it does work, this new
interaction.
It does,
interaction. Yeah. Well, you are the master, and I am just the padawan.
Right. There's much more student interaction, even in the skill stations, than there was before. We always did, I think, a fairly good job of getting everybody involved. But here, when there's some scenarios, the students have to even act as the patients. So we really try to get everybody involved through all that.
Yeah, after experiencing it once, I have to say it was more engaging, and the student participation is key. Number three, though, in this top 10 list is about new or honed skills for instructors.
Yeah. So when we were going through this at the ATLS committee at the COT, there was a lot of discussion on how are we going to teach the instructors on this new way or this new method of instructing this course. So there now is an update that all the instructors need to take, a 10th edition update, to go over some of the changes, but really it's more so to go over the format of the discussions and the skill stations. They have to get up to date with these things. We can't just come in, and as you said, you need to be prepared. Time management is really key in this. It still can be either a 2-day or a 2.5-day course, depending on where you're running the course. But the time management comes a bit more key than it did in the previous courses, I think.
I look at it as you really have to focus to be able to use your time effectively, because time management is a skill. And if you're just throwing up a whole bunch of slides and you're shooting at people with bullet points and you're reading them, I'm pretty sure people who have done an undergraduate degree, done a postgraduate degree as a form of a physician, can read. You know, so reading the slides to them really never made sense to me. And so I really like this. It's almost like each little piece of information is a bit of an elevator pitch. You've got to be able to transfer that information faithfully to the students, but recognizing that you can't just take all of this information and just do a data dump. You actually have to focus and be time sensitive about how you're going to educate them.
Absolutely.
But there's also something else under this one that really caught my eye.
The 5-step method for skills teaching.
Yes.
Why'd you like that so much?
Oh, I love it. Yes. I saw the ATLS and the Committee on Trauma landed on my favorite number of 5. Why? Because I can count to it on one hand. So I really like that. All right. So that wasn't shocking, but that's a nice segue into number 4, shock. So what's new in shock?
So there's quite a few things that are new in the shock chapter. And really the first is now we've gone to the 1 liter of crystalloid.
So you're going to have to expand on that. I mean, what do you mean by 1 liter of crystalloid? How is that different?
So in the previous versions, we'd always, in a patient, trauma patient who comes in, who's potentially in hemorrhagic shock, would be warmed IV fluids and give them 2-liter bolus.
2 liters. So now we're down to 1.
Down to 1 liter. And really where that's based is getting into the early administration of blood products for really those that are in class 3 and 4 shock.
So balance, what do you mean? So you're not just giving crystalloids, you're giving other products?
Yeah, so we really want to try to minimize crystalloid in those patients that have ongoing bleeding or present in hemorrhagic shock.
So 3s and 4s.
Yep, and even 2s sometimes, because, you know, those 2s and 3s can bounce back and forth. And so really the balance refers to the fact that we're really aiming to try to transfuse whole blood. So really 1 to 1 to 1, so 1 packed RBC, 1 FFP to 1 platelets.
We covered that on an SGEM, 1 bourbon,
bet
1 scotch, and 1 beer. That was the theme
did.
Music.
I love it. So really that's what the balance would refer to for sure.
Okay, and you are still using the 4 classes for shock, 1 through 4?
Yeah, they're still the same. What we have changed, we've updated the table really to include blood products and base deficit, just as a marker. Not that there's a great endpoint in resuscitation, but base deficit as to where you're starting from on the initial blood gas, and then whom would require blood. So that's on the new at the bottom of the table.
And then you're introducing this concept of damage control resuscitation for adults and for pediatrics. So can you explain what this damage control resuscitation concept is?
Yeah, sure. So that's more an evolution from really from damage control surgery. And the damage control resuscitation is really based on four main tenets?
I don't know if they're living there, but they better be paying rent.
They may be. Anyway, so really, number one is really early balanced blood product transfusion. Two is minimal crystalloid. Three is permissive hypotension in selected populations, which, again, is a bit controversial. And then four, which is essential, is immediate hemorrhage control, which can either be surgical or transcatheter. So really, this type of resuscitation is ideally suited for patients that present with ongoing hemorrhage without traumatic brain injury. We can sort of get some of the controversy out of that. And the blood pressure goal is really just to generate an adequate perfusing pressure, for whatever that means. Most of the papers refer to, you know, 90 millimeters mercury systolic, but really it's a good perfusing pressure. But there has to be an endpoint, so there has to be some surgical bleeding that you can control.
All right, well, that brings us up to number five, so we're halfway through, and this is about thoracic trauma. What's new in thoracic trauma in this top 10 list?
So we've gone from the needle decompression for tension pneumothoraces in adults. We've gone to doing it in the fourth to fifth intercostal space in the anterior axillary line.
You got to slow down there because, you know, like already you're confusing me because I thought it was always in that second intercostal space, bang, bang.
Yeah, so that's what we always had before. It's still the same way for kids.
Okay, so kids, I'm still doing that.
But for adults, it's pretty much where you're going to place a chest tube, fourth to fifth intercostal space, the anterior axillary line.
So in that triangle of safety there on the side, okay. All right, and does size matter?
Well, it turns out, Ken, size doesn't matter. Smaller chest tubes are completely adequate for hemothorax. So gone are the days where we have to put in the big 36, 40 French chest tubes.
Garden hoses, I call them.
Yes, indeed they were. And, you know, 28 French chest tubes are completely adequate. So the other thing that's new in thoracic trauma would be the management of blunt aortic injury.
All right, so now number six, head trauma.
So with head trauma, we've adopted the revised Glasgow Coma Scale.
All right, so what is this revision of the Glasgow Coma Scale? Explain.
So as we were going through this, I was a little surprised, to be honest. This has been out for several years.
Well, we talk about the knowledge translation, right? And the number quoted is 17 years. 17 years for high-quality, clinically relevant information to reach the patient's bedside. So I'm never really surprised that there's a big gap.
But essentially, it's based on all the same principles, the same score, eye, verbal, and motor scores. And there's just some slight adjustment with the language. So this is well laid out in the new manual. But for instance, for eye opening, instead of saying to speech, it's to sound. For to pain, it's to pressure. And there's a new category that we've put in, or we didn't put in, that Dr. Teasdale and the group put in, is NT, so it's non-testable. So if someone's intubated, well, obviously we can't test the verbal. So yeah. It doesn't get down to the one. I mean, a stone can have a GCS of 3, yeah. Right? But now a stone can have a GCS of NT.
Okay. And I always remember the GCS thinking four eyes wearing glasses, so it's always out of four. Speak out of your five hole, that's your mouth, and then sixth is the motor. So that's how I remember it, but I'm a simple man.
I like it.
Anything else?
So we've also introduced the Brain Trauma Foundation guidelines, which, again, just for the initial management of the traumatic brain injury.
And you're using PCARN now?
So PCARN is being used for CT head guideline for kids less than or greater than 2 years of age with mild TBI, and who really needs a CT head and who doesn't.
Yeah, so we've covered the PCARN, and that's the Pediatric Emergency Care Applied Research Group, and they're phenomenal. They're out of the U.S. They have 30 to 40,000 kids, something like that, in the database, and we covered that in one of the previous SGEMs on concussions, and they do divide it up into children less than 2 years of age and children over 2 years of age. And there's a nice little infographic on that to help people through it. All right, number seven, spine trauma.
Right, so we finally introduced the Canadian C-spine rules and Nexus rules for C-spine imaging.
Well, I tend to use the Canadian rules, eh?
Me too, eh?
Okay, so
you hoser?
Hey, you're a hoser, eh? Take off.
Is that a mouse in my beer?
And you're using the ASIA scoring for spinal cord injuries?
Yeah, so the Asia and then the International Spinal Cord Society scoring, their ISCOS score. So it's really more of a table, I guess. For those patients that have a spinal cord injury, there's the International Standard for Neurologic Classification of Spinal Cord Injury, ISNCSSCI with a silent Q in there somewhere, man. I don't know. But anyways, you can get this online. It's in the manuals as well. It's very easy, but it's basically a tick box so that it's essentially much like what ATLS and GCS is doing. It allows everybody, all their trauma practitioners, to talk the same language for those patients that have spinal cord injury. And this has been endorsed by Asia as well as ISCOS.
So I'm supposed to call it Asia. So I've just identified that. You know, I call it the ASIA, but we can refer to it as Asia.
Whichever you want. It's all good with me.
Things are really heating up here. So
Atlas,
let's get on.
Instead of ATLS? I don't know.
Atlas. Okay, things are heating up. Let's get to thermal injuries, number 8.
So yeah, there's been a bit of a change in the initial resuscitation within the first 24 hours for deep partial to full thickness burns greater than 20%. It's now down to 2 cc's of Ringer's lactate per times the body weight in kilograms times the percent BSA. In kids, it's at 3 cc's.
And it used to be for adults?
4 cc's, yeah. So the old Parkland formula is out and it's halved for the adults and it's 3 cc's per kilogram per percent BSA for kids.
Okay, so we're bringing down the amount of fluids that we're giving for thermal injuries. And so just to make sure people heard that, so instead of using the traditional 4 cc's per kilogram per percentage body surface area, we're dialing that down for adults to 2, and children will be at 3 cc's.
Yep, you got it. And really then we're titrating our fluid titration to urine output. That's what it is. So again, the old, you know, half cc per kilogram for adults and 1 cc per kilogram for kids under 30 kilograms.
So those are the flows you're looking
for.
That's
what we're looking for. So we really want to, you know, they will still require a ton of crystalloid initially, but we don't want to flood the patients as much as, say, we had in the past. And this has been endorsed by various burn societies.
All right, number 9. This is the emphasis on team approach.
Yeah, so there was lots of discussion on whether we should have a whole new chapter on teamwork in trauma and resuscitation, but really that doesn't do it justice. I mean, we're just introducing the topic and just really trying to emphasize really how important it is for resuscitation, for a good resuscitation for both patient and team.
Well, I swam at Western. And my swim coach was named Glenn Belfry. Anyways, he used to always say, there's no I in the word team, Ken.
But there is an M and an E. You know.
Anything else about teamwork?
I mean, I think, you know, trauma is really one of the ultimate medical surgical team sports. And you have to be a good team player to make it work well. There's so much emphasis is really placed on our diagnosis and treatment, which is super important. And little is really done on how to teach how to manage a busy, often crazy resuscitation. And we know it's very clear that good communication and role identification clearly results in a much smoother resuscitation.
Yeah, and the first episode for season 7 of the SGEM is going to be on rudeness and how rudeness can impact team performance in the ICU. So this will be nice.
You want to talk to some of my colleagues?
So if you listen to this episode, you'll be prepared for that episode on how rudeness can really impact team performance. But we've reached number 10, and this is the emphasis on recognition of intimate partner violence and elderly mistreatment.
So we've expanded a little bit. It had been in the previous editions, but we expanded a bit more in the 10th edition. And unfortunately, they're just much more common than we would tend to think, and certainly much more common in the trauma population than we would tend to think. In Canada alone, over 80% of intimate partner violence is suffered by women, with a prevalence of around 310 per 100,000 population, with the highest rate being between the ages of 20 and 29, where it really doubles that. It's about 650.
And you know what that number should be? 0, a nice round number. Sorry, I'm getting angry. But it should be 0, shouldn't it? Well, there's also some stuff about geriatrics.
Yeah, I mean, as trauma providers, we can and should do a better job. And we have to, identifying these women and men who are at risk. And for elderly maltreatment, again, this is something that, you know, with the aging population that we are seeing, I mean, over 15% of our population.
We're seeing, I'm aging right now.
As
okay?
Am I. You know, over 15% of our population is over the age of 65 already, and that's just going to continue to climb. And so we're seeing a lot more increase in numbers of geriatric trauma with all that that's going to bring with it. And one of the things that's going to bring with it is obviously elder maltreatment. So I think it's very important that that we are able to identify this earlier and pick up on the clues. Most cases of elder maltreatment are perpetrated by relatives. And it's hard to find really good statistics on this because there's some self-reported and many of these cases do not get reported to the police for fear of retribution for family, etc. But it's estimated that probably about 10% of Canadian elders have suffered some form of elder abuse.
Again, I'd like to see that number zero. But my best buddy, Chris Carpenter, a geriatric EM, will probably think this is a good idea to emphasize as our population ages. And he goes around actually now certifying geriatric-friendly emergency departments in the U.S. But that's the top 10 changes to ATLS 10th edition. Is there anything else, Neil, that you want to share with the SGEMers about ATLS or just resuscitation in general?
Well, resuscitation in general, this is going to be a long podcast if you want to do that. But overall, I mean, I really believe the course is improved both from the student and instructor perspective. I think it really is obviously a bit biased, but the premier sort of trauma resuscitation course, and it's adapting to the new world. It's not being rigid as it maybe had been quite some time ago. And going with that, we'll be launching an online course probably within the year. So we'll be able to do all the interactive discussions at home, in your living room, wherever.
And there's an app for that too? Like
this will actually be able to do the course. Oh. So we'll be able to do the course, all of that material online with tests and timed interactive discussions as necessary. And then you'd only have to show up in person, required to come to on-site for the skill stations and for the moulages. So that's really exciting, and that's probably about a year or so to out, maybe a little earlier. And as you mentioned, there is an app, the MATLS app, which is a great app to always refer to. It has videos and just-to-the-point type of reminders on with resuscitation.
I've been involved with the ATLS program much shorter time period than you have. And I remember when I first came on board and some of this new sort of teaching method were coming out. And one of the people that has taught me, Ross Fisher, about how to do a good presentation, you know, and I would admittedly sometime cringe looking at the slide design and the bullet points and the way it was being run. And I'm really pleased. This is great because it's really evolving and it's evolved fairly quickly from my standpoint. This 10th edition has really changed, and I hope that they continue to make these kinds of positive changes in the future and it'll just get better and better.
I think it will. I mean, the ATLS committee, and this was spearheaded by Dr. Sharon Henry, who's at Shock Trauma, who's just an incredible person. And she's led a lot of these changes, and it wasn't easy for her, that's for sure. But, you know, it's a really good committee. People are super involved in it and really wanted to see this through because they felt the exact same way that you do with this, that it needs to change, and it's changed
and it did.
Much.
And it did. So shout out to who's the...
Sharon Henry.
Dr. Sharon Henry in the ATLS committee and the... All right. So thank you very much, Neil, for coming up to the Bat Cave and doing this SGEM episode with me.
Hey, thank you. It's completely my pleasure and a total honor, man.
I hope that means he's going to come back, people. Anyways, next week we are starting season number 7 with a structured critical review of a recent publication trying to cut that KT window down from over 10 years to less than 1 year. Until then, Neil, can you give the SGEM tagline?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week. I said that time.